Hello, welcome to a special live edition of the Trish Regan Show as we are in rather historic times right now. For the first time in the history of this great country, a former president is being indicted, federally indicted. Criminal counts here, 38 count indictments just unsealed today, suggesting that the president mishandled classified documents, including allegations about sensitive nuclear programs and all other kinds of potential vulnerabilities. Interestingly, it comes on the same day, or rather around the same time, that Joe Biden, the current president of the United States, is being accused of taking bribes from a Ukrainian energy company. So one could ask, are there like 5 million reasons why you want to indict Trump now? I'm just saying, look, we are full-on banana republic. Ladies and gentlemen, here we go. All right, welcome to the program. I am Trish Regan. Good to have you all here. Portions of the show are brought to you, as always, by Legacy Precious Metals. Go to legacypminvestments.com today. If you're interested in buying gold, you can buy it right there online on the site, Silver 2. Don't want to ignore that. Or you can call them at 1-866-589-0560. Look, this is crazy stuff. I want to welcome you all. I mean, this is just a very unusual time. That's just what I'll say. And I think that it, of course, is unprecedented. And it's in many ways very dangerous, because the concern is whether or not the U.S. government, the federal government, has effectively been weaponized, and whether or not it's being used against a political rival. That's really what's at stake. Of course, the White House doesn't want to talk about this. You know, they're like pretending it's not happening. They're just trying to like go about business in their own little way. But this is Joe Biden's Justice Department. And I think you need to be asking some real questions here, because the precedent that this is going to set is bad for everyone. Let's be very clear on that. It's not good for Joe either, because the second he gets out of the White House, what are they going to do? They're going to pounce on him as well. But let's not forget, this is a political environment in which we live right now. So I want to go through all these. I mean, granted, we can say, well, why didn't he turn him over? Like, what was the big deal? Like, why didn't he turn him over? But then we also have to follow up with, what the heck was Joe Biden doing with documents stored in his Corvette or in the garage next to his Corvette, which he wanted to keep reminding us of, you'll recall, over and over again. And Mike Pence apparently had them too. Like, it's a free-for-all. Everybody just like takes the documents on their way out of town. I mean, strange. And then consider that James Comey chose not to prosecute Hillary Clinton way back when, despite the fact that she actually kind of willfully was storing emails on her computer server. And those emails, I do believe, didn't they wind up in the hands of none other than Anthony Weiner? Like, on his computer, that would have been the guy that was married to Uma Abedin, her aide. I mean, train wreck, right? I mean, you're like, I can't believe I'm seeing this right now, all as we deal with wildfires in the Northeast. Believe me, it's not fun. And lots of other stuff. So I want to dig into this. But first, I just want to say hello to everyone. And it's good to see you here. I love having this exchange with you. I love being able to speak extemporaneous like I am, and with no prompter, and be able to talk to you, I think, in such a straightforward fashion. I see a lot of you are not happy about this. Total BS, says Tim. Joe had documents in his garage next to the Corvette. That's what I just said, right? While Hunter was, okay, I can't say the rest of it, but you're welcome to go and read the comments and reactions online. If you're listening to this on Apple Podcasts, I encourage you to watch the show over on YouTube, to subscribe to the channel. We've been growing. Thank you, guys. Thank you for all your help in all of that. So thank you for subscribing. Thank you for sharing. And if you get a chance, go over to the Apple Podcast and listen to it there as well. Just follow the audio download. So I've been reading through the indictment, which, you know, I'm just like, gosh, how many of these things have I read through now? It's crazy. I mean, here's the problem. You know, it's like the little boy who cried wolf. At some point, the public just says enough already. At some point they say, you know what, we're over it, because we don't trust you. Here we go again. why should the American people believe that the government is correct now when the government insisted they were correct over and over and over again? I mean, don't forget, right? The so-called dossier that you had extremely high up intel professionals saying, look, you know, it's true. He's just bad. He's compromised by the Russians. You had Hillary Clinton even after the fact saying, well, the election was stolen. By the way, those were the terms that they were using on the left. Like, they were the first ones to actually introduce that vocabulary. Do not forget. And so the dossier, oh, that was supposed to be all true, and he was therefore compromised by the Russians, etc. And then it turns out, guess what? Oh, not only was it not true, it was actually opposition research. I mean, you just can't make it up. And our government fell for it. Well, they wanted to fall for it, right? Like, they seem to be part of it. So now, as you see all the lovely pictures coming to us from Mar-a-Lago, you've seen them, right? All the pictures of the boxes everywhere and all strewn out. And they're like, whoa, you know, like, this stuff was 120 boxes. I believe that was the latest count. They're saying that this was really just egregious because it was in a bedroom and it was in a dining room or in the ballroom. I mean, just kind of all over Mar-a-Lago. And therefore, leaving all of these secrets very, very vulnerable to anybody who happened to saunter in to Mar-a-Lago. And so that's why when you look at these charges, they're including, there's an espionage effectively charge in there. They've got concealing possession of classified documents. There's 5 counts of that, 31 counts that are related to withholding national defense information. He did hold on to some things, allegedly, per this indictment, some that were quite critical, and then others that were just sort of simple, like a menu, and I guess something that was written on a napkin between him and the North, I was going to say Little Rocket Man, but I guess he wound up having more of a relationship with Little Rocket Man towards the end, so he held on to some of this stuff, and they're saying, wait, you know, you can't. Of course, you know, the problem becomes, like, why is it okay for Joe Biden to have had this stuff, but not for President Trump? Why is it okay for Hillary Clinton to have just ignored protocol, like, pretty willfully ignoring protocol and keeping sensitive information on her own, a very own server that she was not protecting? That's somehow okay. I mean, don't forget Comey. I've got Comey's statement. I pulled that here, because I think it's important to remember how he was just willing to disregard that in terms of, well, I mean, he didn't disregard it. It was a big deal. And she kind of blamed him for her losing the election. But, you know, he said, look, and I'll quote, we've conducted interviews, done technical examination in an attempt to understand how that sorting was done by her attorneys. Although we do not have complete visibility, we are not able to fully reconstruct the electronic record of that sorting. We believe our investigation has been sufficient to give us reasonable confidence that there was no intentional misconduct in connection with the sorting effort. Well, that's really interesting, right? Because as soon as she knew that they were onto her, she went forward with that whole, like, bleach bit thing and, like, wiped out some 30,000 or so more. I mean, there were tens of thousands of emails. So she just got rid of them all, I guess, in an attempt to save herself. And then there was that tarmac meeting with, you know, Lynch and Bill. And somehow some kind of deal was done and James Comey wound up not moving forward prosecuting her. Why? Oh, because I do believe he thought it would be bad for the country. So James Comey thought it would be bad to prosecute Hillary Clinton because she was running for president of the United States. But fast forward, and here we are with Donald Trump with lots of boxes of stuff that he took out. And by the way, like, he didn't, like, try and shred them or get rid of them or bleach bit them. He was reluctant and certainly dragged his heels on giving them back to authorities. And one could argue that was a really big mistake because, you know, once they asked for it, you should have been like, okay, here we go. I mean, Mike Pence did that and now he's not in trouble. I guess Joe Biden did that. I mean, remember they kept, like, coming up with more and more documents. It was like, here's some in the Delaware House. Here's some over here. Oh, here's some at the office at UPenn, the think tank. That's basically bankrolled because all these donations suddenly poured in as soon as Biden's name went on the letterhead from China. Consequently, I think you just have to say, is this a double standard? And I think we know the answer. Do we not? I mean, is this a double standard or not? I believe it is a double standard because I believe they really have it out for him. Now, I was trying to like, okay, what's the difference between this one and that? How many lawsuits are we looking at now? I mean, you got the Jean Carroll one, you got this one, you've got the Stormy Daniels one with Alvin Bragg, who nobody had ever heard of before. Now suddenly he's a hot star in New York because he's going after Trump, trying to, I guess, allege somehow that this is rising to a federal level because it was campaign finance, because he tried to solve a matter on his own. I mean, look, none of it's great, right? Like, you know, alleged matter, I should say, alleged matter on his own. None of it's great, but what's fascinating and disturbing is that they just keep going back and they keep doing this. And you have to say to yourself, well, why? What is it about him right now? Why is it so bad? And I would just say this. I know, like, look, he's not necessarily everybody's cup of tea. I get it, right? Like, and he is very forthcoming in how he speaks and often probably says too much. And so he annoys a lot of people, but a lot of people love him as well. And so that's what you call in the business very polarizing. He's a polarizing candidate. So why do they keep going after him? Is it because they're afraid? I mean, they're afraid. I mean, right, you look at the polls. All the polls suggest that he will, in fact, be the nominee. It's almost like, I wonder, did you see Chris Christie? He's getting into the race now. I wonder if some of these candidates that are in there, because you have to kind of know, right? Like this, I mean, he's kind of got it locked up. Unless you're thinking the government's going to go after him so hard that he really won't be able to run. I mean, I don't think it'll stop him. I think he's like all systems go and, you know, he's fixated on it and he's determined and he's going to continue to run, which means this little movement right here probably helps secure him the nomination. Interestingly, I should point out that his two attorneys left today. It's not entirely clear whether that was of their own accord or whether that was something that Donald Trump did. I think he released a statement. Actually, I know he released a statement over on Truth Social, his platform, where he talked about how they really needed to fight because these were kind of quote unquote bad people. And these were sort of, you know, really aggressive. I can't remember the exact wording, but something about dirty, you know, like they're going to play dirty. And so he wanted more street fighters, I guess, on his team. But this team was actually all over the airwaves as recently as last night, defending him pretty strongly. And then, of course, the indictment is unsealed. And now they're off the team. They say that they resigned. They turned in their resignation letters. There will be more, I suspect, to come on that, although they did very much wish him well and insist that he is going to be vindicated in all of this. It's just like, why are we putting the country through this? And think about what we're going to have to continue putting the country through, right? I mean, that's the troubling thing. Because the American people are tired. They're saying, but you told us he was a Russian spy, effectively, or an agent of the Russians. And then it turns out, oh, no, that was just all made up stuff. And then you told us this, you told us that. I mean, it goes on and on. Meanwhile, while many in the media were reporting during the last election cycle of 2020 that Hunter Biden's laptop was, in fact, being investigated by the FBI, you had the same crowd come out and say, oh, no, that's just misinformation. So it's like, guys, come on, like enough already. You can't keep doing this or you really, I think you have lost the trust of the American public because people just roll their eyes. And what I would say is a lot of conservatives are going to double down in defense of him. Now, there are some that believe cynically that that's exactly what the Democrat Party wants because the polling suggests that it's going to be much harder for Donald Trump to beat Joe Biden than it would say for Ron DeSantis or kind of almost anybody else out there, right? Like the independents are the ones that might not go for Trump. And that's what makes some in the Republican Party very, very nervous. It's also what makes Democrats excited. There was that Washington Post reporter, I can't remember her name, but she's so incredibly biased. She's a political reporter over there. And she was tweeting out, total glee just last week, Jennifer something, how happy she was because Ron DeSantis had fallen in the polls. We've talked about that. I was telling you just a couple days ago my entire theory on that, that, you know, I think that it's going to be very, very hard for him. Unless, of course, big government steps in and says enough with Donald Trump, which seems to be what they're trying to do. I mean, you think about the election cycle before and you had Hillary Clinton versus Donald Trump. And so the cards were stacked in a very different way in that the Democrats, one, obviously had chosen her, wanted her to win. And two, the establishment was like, who is this guy? Like, they were absolutely terrified of him. And consequently, yeah, I think there was a large contingency out there that did not want her to be prosecuted for those emails. And so that's part of what may be factored into that decision by James Comey to let that go. Consequently, you've got to look at that, I would think, you know, legally as a standard. Why are you going after Trump when you let Hillary go? Why are you going crazy on Trump when Joe Biden had the stuff in his garage? I mean, maybe not as much, right? Like, this is like 120 boxes. I don't know how many boxes Joe Biden had, but felt like every day there for a while, you know, they were finding new things. That was strange. So it made you think, okay, maybe people just take stuff on the way out or they're just sloppy. They're actually indicting his aide as well in this whole thing. So the aide that helped him, I guess, probably carry some of these boxes out. It wasn't actually him carrying the boxes out, but maybe the aide was doing that. And they're saying like he did this and thus he's indicted federally as well. I mean, this is a big deal. Now they're all excited because they're, oh, you know, it's a big deal. It's a big deal. Well, I'll tell you it's a big deal and that it's a federal indictment. I mean, this is not a state. This is not Georgia. This is not New York. This is the federal government making allegations of him taking very sensitive national security documents and then putting them effectively in harm's way because, according to this indictment, between January 21 and August 22, the Mar-a-Lago Club hosted more than 150 social events, including weddings, movie premieres, and fundraisers that drew tens of thousands of guests. So their fear is somebody could have gotten access to this. They go on to say the U.S. Secret Service provided protection services to Trump and to his family after he left office, including at the Mar-a-Lago Club, but it was not responsible for the protection of Trump's boxes or their contents. Trump did not inform the Secret Service that he was storing boxes containing classified documents at the Mar-a-Lago Club. So now everybody's like, well, why did he do this? What was he up to? Why didn't he just release these things? And then there's that, you know, alleged smoking gun, as they might say, from such a credible source, CNN. I'm joking. Actually, we have to talk about CNN later because we haven't talked about that. I was gone the last 2 days, so you missed the live program those 2 days, as did I, of course. And we have not talked about the insanity over at CNN. I have a lot of views on that. I think the place is really, at this point, quite hopeless. Although John Kasmatidis, who owns Grisady's grocery stores in New York City, is actually quite interested in it and said, you know, he'd be willing to do a deal as long as he could run the place. I'm sure the personnel would just love that, right? Kasmatidis is actually a big Trump supporter, very big conservative donor. So that wouldn't go over well. They'd really have to clean it out. Anyway, look, the DOJ here, I think the biggest concern is that the DOJ has been weaponized. And this is something that's come up over and over and over again over the last several years. And you say, okay, well, it's because of Trump. And as I said earlier, he's not everybody's cup of tea. Okay, got it. But, you know, they will do this. This is my concern with anyone, with any conservative. You look at how they're already treating Ron DeSantis and they're all up in arms and there's allegations that it was totally illegal and that he should be prosecuted because he sent some migrants that had come into Florida all the way to California. And that is apparently a prosecutable offense. Now, this is becoming so litigious. This is why I say we really are in danger of becoming that banana republic. And when you think about the banana republic, not just in terms of, okay, everybody goes to jail, literally, like the new president, Lula, he's actually the old president who went to jail. I mean, this is what happens. And his vice president, who had become president too, she went to jail too. I mean, this is what happens in other countries. This is why we don't want this kind of stuff happening. This is why it is a sad day. This is bad news. And you got Democrats and liberal networks cheerleading this. I mean, this is not good for anybody. Let me just be very, very, very clear on that front. So, yeah, so we're like some two-bit banana republic down in Latin America, Venezuela, Brazil, Argentina, take your pick. And by the way, I would say Venezuela is the worst of that bunch, and it's probably not entirely fair of me to use them all in the same breath, given where Venezuela is now versus the others. But Lula, you know, he spent his time in jail. He did his time, and now he's out, because that's what happens in places that do not have law and order, that become so overly politicized, such as what we are looking at right now, ladies and gentlemen. I'm reading some of your comments. And yes, I think you're with me on this. Look, I'm saying this regardless of what you think of Donald Trump. I'm saying this because I care about our country and I want our nation to succeed. And part of that success comes from Americans believing in the system, right? That patriotism that we talk about that's so important. Well, that patriotism can't be based on nothing. It has to be based and rooted in the belief that the system, for the most part, right? Like, it's never going to be perfect, but for the most part, like, tries to do the right thing. And I don't think you can look at this particular case, multiple cases, right? Because this is not the only case, and say, okay, the system is really working. I think you're going to think to yourself, gee, the system is kind of rigged and it's stacked against those that are conservative, most definitely, of course, against Donald Trump. I don't know if you saw the clip that he put out on Truth Social, but, you know, he's like, well, why are they coming after me? Like, all the problems in this country right now, they got to spend time coming after me and resources coming after me. And this is what they've been doing, right, from the very, very beginning. But what's also fascinating is the timing. Like, this could not have been a coincidence. The timing on this whole ordeal suggests, well, I don't know, maybe 5 million reasons why you want to indict Donald Trump right now at this point in time. So let me get to that story. We can circle back to this indictment in just a moment. But I'm talking about Burisma, and I'm talking about allegations that have come forward. Apparently, there's a document the FBI has, which has been shown to some members of Congress because they demanded it, right? They were like totally all over Christopher Wray. We need to see this. We need to see this. And they threatened to hold him in contempt because they had not yet seen it. And so there's a document that allegedly comes from a pretty decent source. And I don't know how much the FBI has run this down. Like, you could say, like, let's just be fair, right? Like, on the one hand, it's like you're playing with fire when you start talking about documents that are circulating out there that haven't really been chased down and haven't been well researched because, well, hey, we went through that, did we not? What do you think the Mueller investigation was all about and the dossier was all about? So it's not like two wrongs make a right. I want to be clear. But nonetheless, this is quite peculiar in that this document is apparently a interview of some kind with somebody that the U.S. considered a pretty decent source who was saying that they had it on good authority that the company Burisma, which is the natural gas company in Ukraine that, well, Hunter had a pretty good gig at, pretty sweet, getting paid some like, what, 50 some odd $1,000 a month to sit on the board of an energy company when he had no experience in the energy industry. Not bad. So Hunter was doing that. And he's making a lot of money off of it. And allegedly, per this document, there was some offer of more money. And there are allegations that there was $5 million for Hunter that was split up in different ways and $5 million to the big guy. They actually, I guess, used the term the big guy. You heard that before, right? In some of the correspondence. And so that is allegedly referring to Joe Biden. So he was asked about this. The president was asked about this. He had kind of a peculiar answer. I mean, he's being accused. Think about this, ladies and gentlemen. He's being accused of bribery. And this is the president's response.
Where's the money? I'm joking.
Mr. President,
it's a bunch of malarkey.
Mr. President, what do you say?
I appreciate it's a bunch of malarkey. I haven't heard that in a while. It's It's kind of like an old Irish expression that my grandmother used to use. Anyway, it's a bunch of malarkey, he said, and he's laughing, saying, well, where's the money? Well, according to this document, or according to members of Congress that were talking about this, there may be a reason for that. Apparently, it was like spread into multiple accounts of different family members. Again, these are all allegations, and I want to be cautious with any of this stuff just because everyone deserves that, don't we? Right? Like everybody. But it suggests that possibly this money was like filtered through numerous accounts in different ways. So we're talking like money laundering here, if that in fact is true. And he just has a weird statement to say. And again, I'll play it again for you.
Where's the money? I'm joking.
Mr. President,
it's a bunch of malarkey.
It's just an odd thing to say in light of this very much being an issue. And one of the things that they're focusing on, of course, is how it may have been spread out. Many, many different tentacles, right, to different family members, etc. That is pretty troubling. Anyway, I get back to the concern about the weaponization of our intelligence agencies, because if, in fact, they are just doing this to keep him out of the Oval Office, then isn't that a direct hit against the American people in that we should be able to vote for whoever we want? By the way, whatever happened, we should be able to have clarity on. I'm not in any way justifying taking 120 boxes. I mean, I don't understand why he would do that. But look, you know, that's... And not to excuse any of it. Let me be very clear on that. But I don't understand why Joe Biden would be taking documents either. I don't. And I think somebody needs to ask these questions. I don't understand why, if you're Secretary of State and you know international entities, intelligence agencies are hacking you and going after you. I mean, you're Secretary of State, for goodness sakes, right? I don't know why you would do that, Hillary Clinton. Keep your own server and your own emails. Unless you somehow think you're better than the U.S. government. And maybe your security is better. I mean, that is bizarre. And it's bizarre that they didn't penalize that in the way that they probably should have. So now they're going to penalize Trump. Okay, you know, I'm not saying two wrongs make a right here. Although I do think that this is a slightly different sort of situation. So this is going to continue. And of course, it's like primetime. I mean, this is what CNN needs, right? We're going to talk about CNN coming up. But I guess this is sort of what the media has ordered. I think a big part of this will focus on intent. They're going to have to somehow prove that Donald Trump was deliberately taking these things in order to somehow hurt the American people and the country as a whole. Can they prove that? Did he deliberately, I mean, intense, yeah, it's a tricky thing. They have to show that he willfully violated the rules. And if they're going to show that, then couldn't you say the exact same thing about Hillary Clinton? Didn't she willfully violate the rules by setting up the whole server thing in the House and then going and doing the bleach bit? I mean, just again, to be fair. Now, I know the government's not fair right now, but that's a huge problem and we shouldn't accept that, and that's not okay. So it comes down to, did the president deliberately, what was he trying to, are you alleging that he was trying to sell them or do this? I mean, any of those questions, I think you've got to take this forward to kind of explain it out here, because the standard, I'm sorry, but this is a former president of the United States of America. Like, we should have a pretty high standard. It shouldn't just be like, okay, let's indict. You know the expression, you can indict a ham sandwich. And you can. Like, it's not hard. But the bar on this one, for us to be indicting a former president and making sort of a laughingstock out of our country, turning us into none other than a banana republic, I think that's taking a step too far. I do want to also point out how the government, like, so cleverly kept sending out those pictures. In fact, it's all in the indictment, the pictures of all the documents and the files. And it was very strange because they went into Mar-a-Lago and you can see how they like took the files and like spread them out on the floor and then took a picture and then released it to the media. I guess they want to be able to justify their case because they know that so many people are so tired of this. They know that so many people are like, okay, yeah, whatever. what is this lawsuit? I mean, I had Alan Dershowitz on the show just the other day, you'll recall, and he's got a new book out called Get Trump, aptly named, of course. And it really feels like that. Okay, like what is next? They're just doing it again and again and again. And this is sort of where they are and what's going to continue to happen. And Americans are tired. They're sick and tired of it. You know what else they are sick and tired of? They are sick and tired of being told that they have to think one way, that they have to accept literally everything. And it's getting, shall we say, just a little weird. I'm going to show you a picture of the guy who was designing merch over at Target. Okay, this is Eric Carnell, and he had, well, a line of clothing, I guess, you know, for Target, just mainly onesies and stuff for babies with nice, lovely rainbows on them. All good, right? Except you saw him in that picture. A little weird, right? It turns out he had this whole other line of clothing that he moonlighted on. That was his real job, where he was selling Satan-inspired stuff. And so it became kind of a big deal. Like, you can imagine, right? Like, everybody's like, okay, well, what are these onesies? Well, it wasn't just the rainbow onesies that were designed by the guy who was worshiping Satan. He says he didn't, by the way. I guess he just sold merchandise that worshiped to Satan. I mean, you can call it whatever you want. Strange stuff. Anyway, he's like, oh, you know, like misinformation, whatever. That's the quote of the day. Everybody loves to say misinformation. Well, overall, though, this company kind of like took a weird detour. A detour that was even worse, I would say, than anything else we have seen, even from Bud Light. We're going to get to Bud Light because they just got knocked off their perch. They are no longer the number one beer in America, and we're going to get to that. But when you put out swimsuits that are called Tuck It swimsuits, I mean, I'd never heard of these before.
This is not, you guys see this? It's tuck friendly.
That's Alex Klein, who like went into, he's joking around, he went into a Target and like tried on the tuck friendly swimsuit. And then of course they had the binders for girls. I mean, that's kind of crossing a line, right? I spoke just the other day, actually on Monday, with Jerry Storch, who's the former vice chairman of Target. You can watch that interview actually here on the channel. And he, you know, he said there are a lot of reasons, and we went through all the other reasons why Target's in major trouble right now. But a big part of this right now is like, what the heck are you doing? Like, who in your marketing department thought this was a good idea and chose not to actually bring it to the CEO of the company? That would be Brian Cornell. Well, I guess that's this gentleman right here. He was running marketing, Carlos Saavedra. This is according to the Daily Mail. He was head of brand marketing, and he was on some LGBTQ boards and had sort of a view, right, a vision of what he wanted his company to be. And that vision included all of this pride merchandise, which again, like they've done it in the past. You could say, okay, well, what's different about this time? Well, this time it was the tuck it thing combined with the binder thing combined with, well, the Satan whatever thing. Again, not actually sold in Target. That's just his other line that he's in, you know, off duty hours working on. And all of a sudden moms are like, what? Really? I mean, come on. And even Jerry was saying, the vice chairman of Target, in a different, you know, he's like, this never would have happened if I was still there. And it just never would have happened. He said, because you've got to have sort of a chain of command. We would have known that this would be sensitive. And you don't want to alienate so many customers. Like, you have to know that this, when you start talking about genital children's private parts, then you're going to actually get people very, very upset. And if you can't figure that out, hello, head of marketing, well, then really and truly, gosh, I guess you're just absolutely no better than this woman.
I'm a businesswoman. Mm-hmm. I had a really clear job to do when I took over Bud Light. And it was, this brand is in decline. It's been in decline for a really long time. And if we do not attract young drinkers to come and drink this brand, there will be no future for Bud Light. So I had this super clear mandate. It's like, we mm-hmm. need to evolve and elevate this incredibly iconic brand. And what I brought to that was a belief in, okay, what does evolve and elevate mean? It means inclusivity. It means shifting the tone. It means having a campaign that's truly inclusive and feels lighter and brighter and different and appeals to women and to men. Mm-hmm. And representation is at sort of the heart of evolution. You've got to see people who reflect you in the work. And we had this hangover. I mean, Bud Light had been kind of a brand of fratty, kind of out of touch humor. And it was really important that we had another approach.
Well, you got that. And you also knocked Bud right off its perch. It's no longer the number one beer in America. New sales numbers just came out. And what do you know? Bud sales, they're down 23% compared with Modelo Especial, which is one of the Constellation brands. And Modelo is like killing it. They're up, what, 15, 16% in the same amount of time? So they are now number one. By trying to impose and force your worldview on your customers, your political worldview on your customers, you have just cost your company some $27 billion. Alyssa Heinerschneid there at Bud Light. It's just remarkable. But you know what I've said before? It's not entirely her fault. It's the whole organization, because that CEO at that company, he, and again, we're going to get to this with Target as well. He allowed this to happen. And then, by the way, had no ability to lead through it, because we waited a couple of weeks for the company to say anything. And then they came out with some fancy ads and they tried to say, rah, rah, America, patriots, blah, blah, blah. Nobody believed it. He went and did this interview with a foreign paper, the FT, Financial Times out of London. And he said, it's just misinformation because it was just one campaign, just one influencer. Well, you know, apparently that's all it takes. Just one time. What do you know? And it really has just decimated the brand, but it shows you how much people care about this stuff and how powerful American consumers really can be. Target struggling again. The stock down more than 3% in trading as yet another analyst comes out and downgrades the stock. This company is going to have a hard time. It's got the political headwinds of its disaster with its Tuckett swimsuits and its binders, combined with a whole economic challenge, right? All the host of problems it's got going on. Taking a look at the stock, you can see actually it was up around 160, and this is not as updated as I wanted to show you. It's actually down under 130 right now. So under 130 a share. Target is going to have a hard time recovering here. So I think, again, you're probably going to be looking at a change of management. I think you have to look at a change of management, because how is this management team going to be able to lead through this? And by the way, what is this management team doing by allowing its marketing department to go totally rogue and introduce things like the Tuckett swimsuit? Now, if you're asking what is a Tuckett swimsuit, let me see if I can play a little bit more of Alex for you, just because it's worth seeing it with your own eyes.
This is not, you guys see this? It's tuck friendly. You see? And
shoot. I'm fast forwarding here. You can.
Thank you, Target. Yeah, just, I just feel like I could run. I could exercise in this.
You know what? Alex, we appreciate you doing that, because somebody had to go in and see it. Somebody had to go in and try it on, so we knew what we were talking about. Of course, now the company finds itself at the top of the Apple iTunes chart with the song by Mr. Blow, the rap song. This is for Jada Blow, who's talking about how the company's targeting your kids.
Yeah.
Went all the way to number one, blown right past Taylor Swift. That's when you know you have a problem. And yet, what's very telling and interesting is the analyst community is still afraid to say it. So the JP Morgan analyst came out. The other, another analyst, as I said today, coming out downgrading the stock. And nobody actually talks about the elephant in the room, which happens to be the Tuckett clothing and the stuff that was designed by the guy who also designed stuff like, oh, I've showed you this before, but let's see it again, shall we? This is some of his merchandise. Satan respects pronouns T. Didn't you just want to buy that? And then you have, oh, Satan loves you and respects who you are. You're important and valuable to the world. You deserve to treat yourself with love and respect. And now he's trying to tell us, no, that's just misinformation. I don't really like Satan. I'm not promoting Satan. I mean, I'm sorry, but like it's there, okay? I think that that clothing line has since been taken down. Maybe that's like an internet thing, like you're not supposed to sell that. Or maybe it's just he claims he was just overwhelmed with orders. I don't get it. But again, I go back to the point being they breached that trust with their customer. And when you breach that trust, like it's a very hard thing to get back. Very, very hard, which is going to lead me to talk about Fox and Tucker in just a moment. But before I do, just let's finish looking at this company, because the analyst community does not want to admit that it's actually the Duckett swimsuits and the other stuff that really got people upset. Instead, if you look at the reports, they're talking about all the economic headwinds, and I'm not disagreeing with that. I think that this is a company that is now facing sort of the trifecta of problems. They got a theft issue. The CEO said on the recent earnings call that they've lost like some $500+ million worth of merchandise because they have crime rings, organized crime rings that are stealing from their stores. Of course, okay? So you get that going on. And then you get the slowing economy and inflation and how people are not spending as much on discretionary items anymore. That's a big deal. Then you get the competition. So Walmart, their sales have been way up. They were up some 7% while Target came in flat. So Walmart's just doing a better job, especially when it comes to managing its inventory, which is critical. I'm just guessing they've got a little leftover inventory of those Tucket swimsuits and those things to, you know, restrain your chest. Unbelievable. So their inventory is a mess. The aisles are a mess. And the business itself is suffering. So all the analysts cite those things. But I would just say, okay, you got all that. And then you're the number one song on Apple iTunes, and it's all anybody's talking about, and nobody wants to go shop there anymore, and mothers feel like it's kind of like, well, hey, you know, I got to take care of my family. I have this much money to spend, and I've always said a lot of mothers are the CFOs of their families, and they don't want to go and shop at Target and give dollars to a store that they fundamentally believe does not represent their values. And again, I think Americans are very compassionate and very giving and very welcoming and kind of libertarian in spirit. But when you push them this far, you're going to get pushback and the stock is going to continue going down. So again, as I was talking about knowing your customer, knowing your viewer, knowing your audience, right? This is a big part of what's happening in the media business right now. Tucker Carlson has his new show, Tucker on Twitter, and he's been there every night. I give him credit. He's actually stuck to the same time every day, unlike me. But I love the flexibility of this. And I don't know if he's talking with all of you. We are live. I don't think he's live. So it's a little easier to kind of manage that. But again, I love seeing all of you here and appreciate all the commentary. But Tucker Carlson has gone over to Twitter. Now, we spoke just the other day. You'll recall on this show, I had the author of the brand new book, Tucker. It's a biography of Tucker Carlson. He was on the show and he was explaining his contract and said that somehow there was some loophole in there which gave him the opportunity to go onto Twitter, but it was the only platform he could actually go on. He couldn't come onto any of these other ones. And so that's why he chose Twitter and was starting there. But you may have seen in the news, Fox News is now saying, no can do. You know what? We're paying you, buddy, to be off the air. And I've explained this to you guys before, the way these contracts in network television work. And I actually think this would be a fascinating legal case. And I'm very curious to see how this moves forward, only because if he's got a smart lawyer, and I believe he does, a guy named Brian Friedman, Brian ought to be able to really push the envelope on this, because one might ask, are these even legal? Are they constitutional? Can you have these non-competes? Especially when the company gives you a big giant kick in the you know what on the way out the door, which I think a few of us have been through. Thank you very much. So if they release it to the media that you're gone and they make it look for whatever reason as though, you know, you're the problem, do they really have the ability to keep you off the air? I think it's a very interesting question. I would suggest no. And so I would suggest they got to pay the $20 million bucks or whatever it's alleged that they are paying him. And they have to allow him to be able to go to a competitor. So they want to be able to just hoard resources, right? And this is, by the way, it's not unique to Fox. It's something that happens everywhere at all of these networks. And they also have kind of like a deal with each other, right? They don't break it with each other. I remember, was it Eric Bolling? I believe it was Eric Bolling years ago. You know, he was over on Newsmax when he was at CNBC and he chose to go to Fox. It was a huge deal, right? Because he was leaving mid-contract and there was some kind of, I believe there was some kind of legal issue that resulted from that. I'll have to ask Eric. But I recall thinking, gee, you know, this is, again, it's an interesting opportunity to kind of push the envelope contractually and legally on these things, because how can they prevent you from going anywhere else if they don't want you? At some of the contracts, I remember really early in my career before I ever knew what I was doing, like signing on to something where they actually could not only get rid of you and not pay you, but then they could keep you off the air. I mean, think about that. That clearly, I knew that wasn't legal. I was like, okay, if they ever try that, then I will try that one in court. So I think that Tucker is saying, you know what? I don't buy it. I'm going to do my show anyway. It's just a little 10-minute thing. It's over on Twitter. He, for whatever reasons, feels that he has enough of a carve-out. Fox is trying to contest that, because they don't want him to continue bringing audience away. It's an important time, though. We're going into a presidential election, and any person who's a commentator or a journalist in this whole environment wants to be out there, wants to be out there speaking. And so consequently, perhaps more trouble ahead. But the other one we got to discuss is CNN. Oh, poor CNN. You know, they tried. They tried. and they clearly failed. And I don't blame the whole thing on poor Chris Licht. He was the guy who was sort of, you know, handed on a silver platter there to the people that had no interest in him being there. I don't entirely blame him, although I blame him a little bit. I mean, there were things that he could have done, should have done perhaps a little bit better. I've met him before. He is not Jeff Zucker. And I say this as somebody who's just, you know, trying to look at this as objectively as possible. I used to work for Jeff Zucker because he was at NBC when I was at CNBC, and I reported on the Today Show and NBC News. And Jeff had a way with people that made people feel valued. It's something that you're going to see in any good leader. Any good leader has this quality. Whether or not you agree with his politics, and obviously I don't, I'm just trying to look at it objectively here. Like, how did he manage to do okay and have sort of the faith and this tremendous morale among employees? And by the way, like, his ratings weren't that great either. It's because somehow he convinced them all they were on a mission to get Trump. I mean, it's part of the problem. Right. But he brought them all in. He was very, very chummy with talent. He, meaning that Chris Cuomo was his buddy and all the other talent there. And I remember this, he'd like send you an email on your birthday, happy birthday. He was always very good about that. He liked talent. I actually think he genuinely liked talent. And listen, we're kind of a special little breed that maybe not all managers or producers necessarily like, only because, you know, it can be a lot to deal with them. But if you like talent and you appreciate talent and you understand talent, then you're going to get more out of them. And this is just true in any management environment. It's the problem that Fox has, frankly. I mean, they don't have management in place that understands, likes, and gets talent, right? Because it is, it's a high-pressure, high-stakes kind of job, and everything's sort of riding on you when you're out there, even though you get a team of producers behind the scenes and they're doing some research for it. I mean, I don't have that here. It's kind of just you and me, and I have a little bit of help, but I don't have what I had at a network where you have a lot of cooks in the kitchen and you got the bells and whistles and you got all the graphics and this, that, and the other. The pressure, for example, on that one person is pretty unique, and it takes a very kind of unique person to be willing to get up there and do that every night. And if you don't have producers behind the scenes and managers behind the scenes and chief executives behind the scenes that kind of understand and appreciate that, then I think you can get off into a bad path. I'm not saying that Chris Licht didn't. I just think he was probably, having met him a few times, a shyer personality who didn't really want to warm up to people or cozy up to people. And then you had that big Atlantic article, which suggested, of course, exactly that. And it seemed as though he was more interested in maybe pleasing his bosses than in leading an organization. And so therein lies the challenge. And that is a tough organization to lead. What I would say is any organization, right? When you step in, it can be really difficult. And if you're coming in and you're like, okay, now I need to change it all. Well, of course, you're going to see resistance. So it comes down to how good you are as a manager and as a person, right? You're going to be kind of a people's person. You've got to be able to kind of correct course and steer the ship and have everybody on board. And by the way, if they're not on board, you know, you got to figure that one out. But he didn't get everyone on board. He didn't have a big, warm personality. And, you know, on top of it, he made bad choices on the talent front. And it's amazing to me how often that happens. Putting Don Lemon in the morning? I mean, I said when I'm like, you got to be kidding me. Don Lemon in the morning. Like, nobody wants to wake up to Don Lemon in the morning. And now you're going to put him with two women. Well, he's not going to like that. Again, knowing talent, if you knew talent, you should understand. You should be able to get in the head of Don Lemon and say, you know what? Don is not going to want to have to sit next to two women and chit-chat about morning stories. He's just not going to do it. He's not going to be good at it. It's not going to be believable, whatever. And you put these other two women in a very, very bad spot. On top of that, one of the women somehow he thought was the greatest thing since sliced bread. And you like put her in at 8 p.m. I believe she's still there. This would be Caitlin Collins. And I think she's a very, very good reporter. But, you know, there's a difference between being a good reporter, which, by the way, we need more of. Do not underestimate that. There's a difference between being a good reporter and being a show host. There just is, in terms of your energy, in terms of your intellect, in terms of your versatility and ability to kind of roll with things. And she didn't quite have that. So it was just mistake after mistake after mistake. And yes, he got rid of, we used to call him the little Jeff sucker. You know, I think Hannity had a different name for him. I don't want to be cruel. But Brian, I can't remember his last name, but you know who I mean, the media critic guy. And he's, you know, he tried very hard. He also was not somebody who was necessarily what you would call TV friendly or personality friendly or engaging on television in any way. He was probably a good reporter for that kind of thing, in trafficking and gossip and that sort of stuff. And so I think that Brian left, and then all of a sudden, and I think Dylan Byers was another media reporter. So you had these media reporters that were sort of scattered, and they were leaking, and they were like conspiring, right, with the former boss. It's like Bob Iger all over again at Disney. And they're conspiring to sort of take Chris Licht down. So he's in this no-win situation. He doesn't have the support of the talent. He doesn't have the support of the rank and file. He's not really chummy-chummy or warm or outgoing. And he's scared to death because David Zaslav, who's a smart guy, and Malone, by the way, who also, you know, two really smart guys, and Malone is certainly more conservative than he is liberal, they want to change the place. But do you have the right person there to do it? I guess in retrospect, everybody would agree, no. I don't disagree with anything that Chris was trying to do. I think that that organization was at its best when it really could be a straight news organization. Now, I don't really totally think there's anything, you know, special about like straight news. I don't even think it really exists, because everybody, let's face it, comes with their own bias. And can you leave that bias, you know, on the coat rack when you walk into the office every day? Yes and no. I mean, that I think that bias is reflected sometimes even in your tonality, what words you choose to emphasize and just how you look at everything. It's one of the reasons why you actually do need a lot of diversity in a newsroom, meaning, yes, men, women, diverse backgrounds, and dare I say, diverse politics. Because you need the libertarian to be able to look at something with crystal clear libertarian eyes. You need the conservative to look at it from a small government perspective, and you need the liberal who's going to come at it, you know, let's spend more money. I mean, you need all of it in order to really generate a fair product. And I think if you can, and you should be up front and very, very forward about your biases. I mean, that's, I tell you, hey, you know, you had me at taxes. Cut taxes, lessen regulation, allow people to be themselves and to achieve all they can. I mean, it's to me anyway, a pretty simple formula, and keep us safe. Not so simple. But there are some, you know, certain biases I have that you hear about, and I'm pretty upfront about. If you're trying to write a very straight story, then, well, yes, you can. It's not going to be as interesting. Don't forget that. I mean, we're living in a whole different world right now, because you guys can go find me right here, as you have on YouTube. You can go find anytime. You can get Tucker right now, right? Over on Twitter, you can go find your sources of information that you feel are aligned maybe with your sensibility, but not just aligned, hopefully, because I've told you, there's no mystery here. I kind of wear my heart on my sleeve and I tell you exactly what I think. In fact, it has often gotten me into trouble in the past. I'm very forthcoming with what I think, and sometimes a little too ahead of the news curve, but that's just who I am and how I like to be. And you can come and find that. And that empowers you as a viewer to have more say, as long as you're able to, right? I mean, that's why we're all worried about AI. I did a big special on it the other day. And as long as we're in a continually fair environment that allows for that, which is why I bring us full circle back to the indictment. Again, I'm not excusing taking the 120 boxes. I'm not excusing not turning them over when they kept asking for them. But I do think it's a little bit peculiar that they are very deliberately trying to take him out in a massive way. And my worry here is that it's not just him. It will be whoever is the conservative, because this is the mission. You know, as Jeff Zucker allegedly told his employees, we got a mission, you know, and the mission is going to morph from to take Trump down to take any conservative down. And that's indeed quite concerning. I want to open it up to some of your comments and some of the stuff that you guys are talking about. We haven't even talked about the fires there in Canada, which, wow, because I live in the Northeast, definitely have felt it's something else. I mean, it really, and you've seen all the pictures. It's just wild to see. And I think that Justin Trudeau probably needs to do a better job on his forest fire management. You know, here's an interesting little stat for you. This is very interesting to me. So Canada, you know, has a lot of land, a lot of forest, like way more than us, right? I mean, we've got a pretty big population compared to Canada. Well, Parks Canada had only scheduled 23 controlled burns. This is what they do in order to kind of, you know, manage the forest. You can't, you know, and you can debate why it's happening, but, you know, the temperatures are rising and blah, 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 and the air gets stagnant, and all of a sudden you have these fires. And then they, you know, they were up to more than 400 of them burning out of control. More than 200 were certainly out of control, and they're trying to get this managed right now. But Parks Canada had only scheduled 23 controlled burns this year, and by comparison, right here in the U.S. of A., United States of America had 150,000. That would be for the year 2019. So you think about us doing 150,000. I mean, that's a lot of burns, right? Compared to 23. So this is a really important part of the forest management. You just have to do these things in order to keep up with this. And one of the people that runs the Parks Canada was actually quoted in the Daily Mail. I'm going to share with you. This would be Mark Heathcott, and he's run that Parks Canada Burns Division for 23 years. And he said Canada was, quote, way behind American counterparts when it came to controlled fires. He went on to say a lot of lip service is paid to it, but very few agencies do it. So thanks, Canada. I think you might owe us a little something, right? Didn't we send like 600 firefighters up there? I hope Canada's paying for that. Just say, look, it's not good. And we have to take things like that seriously. And frankly, we have to hold countries accountable because it's hurting us. All right, let me go out to your questions right now. As I said, so good to have so many of you here tonight on this historic evening. as they have unsealed the, I almost said dossier. You know, it kind of all blends together after a while. Just another indictment, just another here. Think about that. He's the only president to be impeached twice. I mean, there's a lot of firsts here, a whole lot of firsts, and it's not good. It's not a good thing for the country. We are indeed heading straight to banana republic land. I think there's no other way to sugarcoat that one. It is not a good thing to see. But anyway, again, I'm going out to some of your comments right here. Great to see you. We've got some Canadians joining us. So I'm sorry, like for anybody, you know, and I've gotten some comments on Twitter from people in Canada. They're like, you know what? I love you and I love everything you say. But on this, I'm really, you know, I don't think it's our fault because we get tons of smoke from California whenever you guys mess up on your fires there and you don't control it enough there. And that could quite possibly be true because, you know, I don't have a ton of faith in the government of California or in Gavin Newsom. But I was pleased to see anyway that we're trying to do a better job than Canada does on its fires. Anyway, again, I'm just looking at some of your comments, which are great to see. Annie's sharing something with us. Some people having a very, very dark view. I see PGTMR too of what the fires might actually be. And I certainly would hope that that is not some kind of environmental terrorism. This is something that's being suggested by one of the comments. And if so, then we have a whole other set of problems on our hands. But I do go back and I point to those 23 fires versus 150,000 controlled fires happening in the U.S. And I would just question whether Canada itself is really doing what it needs to do, right, to actually keep us safe. As we've been discussing, the two attorneys allegedly turned in their resignations. I think Donald Trump would tell you he fired them. I am trying to sort of track that one down and get to the bottom of it. But he is saying, Donald Trump is saying on True Social that he kind of needed some street fighters. And maybe these guys were too, you know, white shoe. I don't know. White shoe is a term that they use for law firms that are sort of those clubby law firms. And, you know, not really like scrappy, like the opposite of scrappy. And so maybe he thought he needed some stronger fighters. They have been representing him, I believe, over the course of the last year. So it is a little bit of a surprise to see that. Mac is asking about my coffee cups. Thank you. Because I keep like drinking water. I don't have any commercial breaks, guys. Like, you know, if I don't play you some more sound, I get it. You know, that's that. Think about that. We are just here and it's all live. And when I need to take a drink of water, I will. But yeah, I designed these. It says live free or die, which is the state motto in New Hampshire. It's actually originally a French expression. From years ago, and then it was adopted during Revolutionary War times, and then it became the state motto in the state that I grew up in New Hampshire, and I always kind of liked it, and I think it kind of symbolizes so much of, you know, how I feel, I think how so many of us feel right now. Freedom really is everything, and it's critical that we guard it and that we protect it. So yes, this is what I drink my water out of, and it's what I drink my coffee out of as well in the morning. A lot of you never watch CNN, so none of this mattered anyway, and I hear you. It's not an easy network to watch. None of this is. In fact, you know, I'm going to tell you, like, I don't really watch network TV, that cable TV. I get a lot of, well, I go everywhere, right? So like I'm on every site every day looking for all the news I possibly can. And I prefer to seek it out. I don't like to be fed it by these networks because all that comes with that is the bias of the institution. And having been at these institutions, I'm well aware of that. And consequently, it's just like, okay, yeah, you know, and you can tell when they're reading the prompter and then they screw up reading the prompter or they say something. It's just, I know how the sausage is made. And I guess it's just not fun to watch the product live on TV. I much prefer this environment and seeing other people that are willing to take chances and do things a little bit differently. And I think that is the future of news. And so as we were discussing, like management, whether it be at Target, whether it be at Bud Light, whether it be Anheuser-Busch, whether it be at Fox or CNN, you really need, in all of these large institutional-like places, you need good leadership. Leadership is everything. And when you have a leadership vacuum, as I do believe CNN is going to continue to have, I mean, what do they have, three, four people? I saw four, and then I saw three people that are in charge of the place. My advice to them is, listen, keep your head down. Rally the troops as much as you can. Don't seek all the publicity. In my business, they have things called what they call soft launch. Like if you have a soft launch for a show, you don't do a big public spectacle, you know, putting your face all over the buses in every town in America saying, hey, you know, watch Trish Regan on YouTube. You don't do that because it's not as authentic. You ideally want to be able to grow an audience, right, from the ground up. And that's the way that I believe certainly it's the most rewarding for the audience and for the product or the network itself, in this case, just a little old me. But in the case of this particular manager, Chris Licht over at CNN, you know, there was a ton of stuff written about him, a lot of high profile pieces, a lot of nice little puff pieces. I think that he thought with The Atlantic, he was going to get another puff piece and they just totally took him down. And you have to be very cautious of that. I mean, you don't want to be out there tooting your own horn until the appropriate time. And so I think Joe Rogan is a great example of this. I mean, Joe kind of just all of a sudden was on the scene and everybody was like, oh my gosh, this guy has like 11 million listeners a day. I mean, it's just incredible how many people are listening to him, how many people love his show and the following he has. It is just enormous. So you didn't hear about him in the news cycle the way you've heard about a lot of other talent on so-called networks. And in terms of management, that's one where, again, like, you know, you got to tread carefully because you got your talent out there watching you at every move. Chris Licht had a lot of articles written about him. And it's like, no. You want the articles about the network, right? And the people that are supposed to be the stars, the ones that are on camera. You don't want every article about you because that's actually going to generate a lot of bad will, dare I say. And in fact, I was right. I mean, I looked at it as it was all going down. I'm like, why are they doing? In fact, I wondered at one point if it was actually by design. Were they doing this so that they could actually, you know, throw him to the wolves, so to speak, when and if needed? But I don't believe that was actually the case. I think this, you know, again, if one is to believe the Atlantic article, a lot of this was generated from him, that he did want some positive publicity. And I would just say, look, do your job, keep your head down. Whoever goes in there to manage it, it is a thankless position to be in. You've got your work cut out for you. You might need somebody internally that really has the respect of the rank and file again. But then again, you may not be able to change it. And if you want to change it, you're going to have to really roll up your sleeves and make changes, which is why John Kazmatidis may be the best answer from Gristades. I love John. He's been on the program before, actually. We should get him back on because I know you guys will love him too. He just calls it like it is. He runs WABC, which is a radio station, big one in New York, very successful. He's been very successful there. And he just gets it. And he's like, listen, I could do this. I could have both sides and make sure that both sides are fairly represented. But you just have to be upfront about it. I would only caution, you know, he's in the radio business, but I would caution whether or not that is actually the future. Do you want to sink a bunch of money into a network that can't stream online? I mean, remember their little streaming thing? Didn't Chris Wallace go there for the streaming thing, which turned out to be not so hot? The streaming thing is really important. I mean, that is where the future is, and that's where everybody, you guys are all here, but a lot of young people are there. I think that as we move forward in this new environment where people like you are really seeking out their news sources, you're going to see, just as I do every day, I seek out my news sources deliberately and I go everywhere because I need to know what every single side is saying. I want to know the good, bad, and the ugly. And if you don't do that, if you just live in this little bubble where Rachel Maddow is spewing the same stuff, or, you know, the Acosta over at CNN just is having you drink whatever Kool-Aid, then you're not really getting outside of what you need to know. And so hopefully, while I may present a viewpoint that's right of center to you, hopefully you're getting more context and you're getting a little bit of the other, you know, I may not agree with the other side, but I'm going to try and always provide it to you anyway. So again, wonderful to see you. Gilberto Chavez, good to see you here. Great to see you, John. I'm laughing because Max says, I was having a good night until you mentioned Chris Wallace, Trish. So I apologize for that. But you know what, Mac? You might not have been here earlier because do you want me to really ruin your night? Oh, I might be able to. Hang tight. I won't play it again. I'm going to make you go back earlier in the show and watch it. Our friend Alex Klein decided to try on one of those Tuckett swimsuits at Target. So that might really ruin your night if you go look at that one. Anyway, you'll see it earlier in the show. But it's great to see you. Robert, thank you for your lovely, lovely compliments. And Annie's asking, why is Trump holding a rally tomorrow? I think that you're going to hear from Donald Trump a lot. I know that he likes doing these rallies and he's going to want to really effectively rally, right? The troops and his base. And ultimately, the reality of the situation is what doesn't kill him makes him stronger. And they keep trying and they keep trying and they keep trying to take him out. And they have not been successful. I think there are many, including many conservatives, that are very hopeful that maybe this time, you know, this is third time's a charm. Or, I mean, it's way beyond three times at this point. And so there are a lot of people that are hopeful that this is going to actually do it. That may be why you're seeing more people get into the race. But I don't think it will. I think that you're going to find conservatives that say, wait a second. You know, if they were on the fence and they were thinking of maybe supporting Ron DeSantis or Mike Pence or whoever, now they're like, what the heck is going on? Like, it's not right. And consequently, it may actually solidify his position there at the top of the ticket. And then the Democrats are hoping that the poll data holds and that Joe Biden, by just being the least disliked candidate, right? Again, going back to polarization, if people just like him a little bit more than Donald Trump, then they will be willing to forgive and forget all of the policy screw-ups. And there have been many. And they will also be willing to forget any perceived health issues. Don't forget he fell the other day there at the Air Force Academy. And there, just again today, he was struggling with the teleprompter. Tell him to go off script, right? Like we are right here. Forget the script, Joe. Because, you know, the teleprompter keeps messing you up. Anyway, I think that the Democrats are hoping he's the nominee. And then we're going to be right back in this environment where, I'll tell you, conservatives are going to have to figure themselves out. Because if they want a conservative in office, then they're going to really have to rally and they're going to have to play it smart. And Trump is going to have to play it smart as well. But it will not be a layup. I don't want to sugarcoat anything. Simultaneously, I do think it's a mistake for Democrats to be so dismissive and think that America will not vote for him again. I wouldn't be so sure of that. So it will be a very contested race and unfortunately a very ugly time for this country. It's an ugly time right now. There's no other way to look at this other than to say there is a double standard and it's not fair. And the amount of cancel culture that's going on in society right now is putting us on a very difficult and increasingly dangerous path. Did you see the study on Princeton University students that was done just the other day by an organization called FIRE? FIRE is a free speech organization, and they ran a survey, which they sent out, quite alarming here, about the freedom of speech that is right now not allowed on campus at one of America's top institutions. Princetonians, apparently these days, don't have a whole lot of enthusiasm for anyone's opinion that they don't agree with. The survey basically shows that, so many of these college students believe that they should be able to shut down language that they don't like. Only 18% of students at Princeton right now say they are very familiar with Princeton's free speech rule. So that's concerning. Like, you should know. By the way, like, Princeton's free speech rule? How about America's free speech rule. 48% of students say that any speech that uses discriminatory language or language that a class of persons finds offensive or hurtful should not be allowed. Now, that actually is something else, right? Because how do you determine what is offensive? I guess right now, if somebody is non-binary and they define themselves as they, and I happen to make a mistake and call they a he or a she because, well, you know, I'm not supposed to, and like I can get squelched if I do, and I refer to he or she, well, then it's okay to discriminate against me? Like, and who are you to say what the discriminatory language really is? Only 30% say they support the standard of free speech in the First Amendment. Think of that. What's happening to America? What's happening to kids today? You mean to tell me only 30% of those Ivy League students at Princeton University support the standard of free speech in the First Amendment? I mean, if that's the path we're on, guys. Really? I mean, we got big problems ahead. 40% of students say an athletic team should be able to deny a spot to or suspend a student who expresses views others find offensive, although such action would also clearly violate the university's rules. Like, they have actual rules, like, not to mention, like, you know, the First Amendment. 40% of the kids at Princeton think about this. They think it's okay if somebody on the athletics team doesn't agree with their viewpoint, well, then you can suspend them from the team? Are they like a bunch of fascists or totalitarian, like little wannabes? I mean, and perhaps most disturbingly, only 24% say only 57% say it is never appropriate to block other students from attending a speech. 16% say it might, at least on rare occasions, be appropriate to use violence to block a speaker? Like, are we like losing brain cells in America? These are the best and the brightest. A bunch of Ivy League kids that say 16% of the time you might need to use violence to block a speaker. I guess I'm not going to be looking to go speak on any college campuses anytime soon. Wow. I mean, this is a sad state for our country overall, and it's our job to try to fix it however we can, right? Again, so great to see. Annalise, bring back paper ballots. Yeah. I mean, but look, anything can happen in any of these things. I think the answer is you just need to have a lot of checks and balances, right? That's ultimately what we need to ensure. And so the onus is on conservatives as it is on liberals as well, to make sure that there's transparency and belief in the system. We need that. We need to restore our belief in our institutions. I don't know if it can be restored. I really don't. I think that it's quite possible that the train has left the station in more ways than one. And it's disappointing. Anyway, we're going to find out more in the coming days. We'll see how this all plays out. John, I'm sorry you said the swimsuit hurts your eyes. I know. I get it. I know. But hey, it's important to at least know what's out there, right? So you know, Alex went to Target, so we don't have to. He tried on the swimsuit, so hopefully, I'm betting you anything, very few people have tried on that swimsuit. In fact, it was funny to watch how the women at the cash register were laughing their heads off as he was running around in the swimsuit. Anyway, again, wonderful to have you all here. We've got some really interesting stuff coming up over the weekend. I should point out, I am sitting down with a gentleman by the name of Avi Loeb. He's a professor at Harvard University. He ran the astrophysics department there for a long time, for many, many, nearly 20 years. And he is the head of and founder of an organization that is really seeking to get more information about, bear with me, aliens. And he is kind of really just all over. He's actually this summer going out on a special fishing expedition, if you would, looking for alien artifacts at the bottom of the ocean. And so you'll recall just the other day, we had the former Intel op, the guy who had been at the Pentagon and had been investigating these unidentified foreign objects for the U.S. government. He is now a whistleblower that's coming forward and saying there's this whole program. Nobody knows about it. So I'm sitting down with Professor Loeb, who firmly believes that this alien life does exist in our galaxy somewhere, and believes that, in fact, they may have even visited Earth. So he's a heck of a lot smarter than me, and I am fascinated to hear more about this and get his perspective on what we're hearing now from this former intelligence operative who's been very adamant that we need to know more and that Congress needs to have some oversight of this, that this is money that's being spent and Americans deserve to know. So we'll hear what Professor Loeb has to say. Again, that'll be coming up over the weekend, and we will be slicing and dicing this show from here to Sunday. So you'll have some little clips that maybe you can share with friends. Again, if you haven't subscribed, please do me that favor. If you get a chance, go over to the Apple Podcast, follow it. I'd love it if you could give a nice review and maybe a nice rating. Five stars only. And I'll see you here tomorrow. Thanks so much, everyone. Have a terrific evening.